This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Well, hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, managing editor here at Texas Scorecard, joined here with Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent, and look, the big deadline, one of the biggest deadlines we've had so far in this legislative session has come and gone now as the Texas House can no longer pass House bills. Last night at midnight, you had tons of bills die, right there as the clock struck midnight. You wrote about this last night. What does this mean for going forward?
Well, ultimately, as we were just talking about before we went on the air, it means that it's less bills to track in the legislative process, right? It's significantly the universe of bills that have any prospect of becoming law is now smaller. Mm-hmm. It gives us kind of more time to obviously focus on that small universe and kind of see what gets through the rest of the process. It also means that the House will only be considering Senate bills from here on out, at least for the next 2 weeks until the next big deadline. And obviously there's some other deadlines I'm sure we'll get into, but it means that the session mm-hmm. is coming to its head, right, ultimately.
Right, certainly a big kind of crescendo, big mark as we've gotten, really just a couple weeks left in this legislative session. Right. Important thing to note, we talked about this as we went through the week and you had an update at texasscorecard.com about this, that, the way the House works, the way the legislature works, they're setting these calendars, and some activists were happy to see, their favorite bills that were put on a calendar. Sure. But ultimately, they didn't get to all the bills they scheduled.
That's right. In fact, they had right when, I'd say an hour before midnight or so, they had just started the bills that were set on Wednesday's calendar, right? That's how kind of far back the stack was. And ultimately, when they started the day yesterday, they still had almost 300 bills to try to get through in the overall calendar if they were to finish it, of course. And so, yeah.
What were some of these bills? So the big one that we really, really noticed and that a lot of people are ringing up their Texas House members, their Republicans, right now on is House Bill 1399, mm-hmm. Gender modification. That was something that was set for the end of the calendar that they ultimately didn't get to.
That's right. And in fact, I think there were still like 65 or 70 bills away by the time the night ended. Obviously, that's House Bill 1399 that you're alluding to by State Representative Matt Krause, a Republican there from Hazlitt. It had 48 other Republican co-authors on the bill, right, to include people that were on the calendars committee that decided to put it that far down on the calendar, right? And so I think that's notable. And it was something, it went to calendars, mm-hmm. Late April, I suppose it was. And calendars committee didn't consider the bill until Monday, when they set it for Wednesday. So,
well, and the interesting thing too is that you had the bill's author, State Representative Matt Krause, out there a week or two ago saying, essentially, hey, don't worry, they're not slow. There's no slow rolling here. Now we see that, well, there really was.
Yeah, I mean, it passed the House Public Health Committee April 15th, I think it was. And the committee report itself, process matters, right? So the committee report itself didn't get filed with the House Calendars Committee until April 27th. That was almost 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of bills that I can see, right, or that we're watching the process that took 2 weeks to basically wrap up everything that happened in committee and march it over, right, like physically walk it over to the calendars committee and turn it in, other than that one.
So. Yeah, so exactly. You've got a lot of slow playing. I mean, this is very much, we talk about this a lot. This is very much, there's the show that they want you to see of how the legislature works, but there's also this game that often happens behind the scenes.
Right, absolutely.
Wasn't just that bill, though. There were actually a number of bills you wrote about that were further down on that calendar that House members just ran out of time to pass.
Right. There was a bill related to election integrity, and of course that's a very general term,
sure.
Right? What does that mean? But it was notable because it was a Republican Party of Texas priority related to election integrity. Specifically, it was a bill by State Representative J.C. Jetton, mm-hmm. Republican there from Sugarland. It would require the Texas Secretary of State to monitor these county clerks and voter registrars and have like a uniform state compliance, if you will, with the laws and how they relate to maintenance of our voter rolls. They didn't get to that bill. There's another bill, the Texas Healthcare Conscience Protection Act, by State Representative Tom Oliverson. It would have expanded these conscience protections to healthcare workers who, for whatever reason, for right of conscience, decided, I don't want to do that healthcare procedure. It would not only extended protections for them, but provided liability protections in a suit, right, for them. They didn't get to that. And that had 53 Republican co-authors on it, right? Another bill, there was a monument protection bill by Cole Hefner there that had 29 Republican co-authors that died on the calendar. This would have provided like a uniform law both on the state level and local level to essentially say, look, you can't remove, relocate, or alter any of these public monuments with the exception of these parameters, right? And it also, importantly, because a lot of activists have opined on this, it reactivated what they called this Historical Representation Advisory Committee, which would have provided some guidance on, like, what to add or remove as a part of the Capitol complex. And, we've seen, there's especially Democrats have made multiple motions to get rid of certain monuments in the Capitol complex. And that died on the calendar last night.
Well, and monument protection has been one of those priority areas for activists where we've really seen very little movement out of the House to this point.
Right.
And so certainly to see any bill relating to that is a definite blow there. Some bills, however, didn't even make it to the floor, didn't even get the chance to be put on the calendar. We'll talk about those in just a second, but I want to show you. You're hearing us talk about what exactly this midnight deadline looks like. Look at how lawmakers treat the process, okay? I want you to watch this yourself. See how Texas House members treat this process, treat the bills, and cheer as those important priority bills die when the clock hits midnight. Check out this clip.
The chair lays out on second reading HB 662. The clerk will read the bill.
HB 662 by Collier, related to the administration of the Homeless Housing.
With
the Texas Department
move
of
passage,
Housing.
Move passage. Move passage. Move passage.
Chair, Ms. Collier, explain the bill. The question occurs final passage of the gross bill. HB 662, all in favor say aye. The
passage.
Passage of the gross bill. Members, the next bill on the calendar is HB 48. The Senate Companion is over. Nelson with Chili's out on second reading. SB 45, the clerk will read the bill.
Sexual harassment protections.
Move passage. Relating to the prohibition against sexual harassment in the workplace.
Chair Riders, Ms. Wiener, explain the bill.
Sexual harassment protections. Move passage.
Question occurs to pass the third reading. SB 45, vote. Please vote out.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Dutton, for what purpose?
Mr. Speaker. All right,
Mr. Speaker,
I respectfully raise a point of order against further consideration of any bills under Rules 8, Section 13B, in that the time for consideration of House bills on second reading has expired.
Please bring your point of order down front.
Well, Texas House members may be cheering and laughing about hitting the end of the calendar, but advocates who have been seeking the end of child gender modification, this disfigurement, essentially this child abuse, were definitely not cheering when the clock hit midnight there. But as I mentioned before that clip, Jeremy, those were the bills that even got placed on a calendar, whether or not that really means anything.
Sure.
What all has died on the way? Like, hasn't even been made that far.
Sure. I think most notably is a ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying.
Sure.
Right? That bill was heard, the House version of that bill, by State Representative Mays Middleton. I think it's House Bill 749, was heard in early March in the House State Affairs Committee. It was left pending, never voted out or anything. There's kind of mums the word, right? As far as the Senate version of that never got a hearing of the statewide ban.
Mm-hmm.
There was a House version of a ban on kind of doing it in the federal level, right, from state advocates. That died, didn't get a hearing. That was by Representative J.C. Jetton. And then really the only bill that's out there still that deals with this is Senate Bill 10 by State Senator Paul Bettencourt. That passed the Senate, I guess a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been sitting in the House State Affairs Committee ever since, and it's unclear whether or not it'll be brought up.
And that bill, I think it's important to note, it certainly does ban some taxpayer-funded lobbying, but it only bans it in cities and counties.
Correct.
It doesn't touch school districts, emergency management districts, any of these other outside areas that do definitely engage in taxpayer-funded lobbying. And it's interesting to note, too, because 2 years ago, the Senate was able to pass a stronger ban. Seemingly, they don't have the votes this time to do that.
Right, yeah, seemingly, right? Something politics is driving it, for sure. I think the other thing to note here is that in the interim, between last session and this session, there was ballot proposition language on the Republican primary, right, ballot, where it was, like, overwhelming. It was 94%, I think,
something
of Republicans
like that, yeah,
wanted to see a statewide ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying.
And it's not just taxpayer-funded lobbying. You've also got serious legislation to reform executive authority, essentially those emergency orders, those powers that we've seen Governor Greg Abbott exercise unilaterally for the past, almost, I guess, a year and a half at this point. The House did pass a bill touching some of that, in many ways kind of codifying that power.
Sure.
But serious reforms have not made it to the floor.
That's correct. The Senate, very early on, over a month ago now, right, have acted on reforms on the executive level and local level now, mm-hmm, right? And both those have passed the Senate, and they're, again, sitting in the House State Affairs Committee, right? Mm-hmm. Two bills by Senator Brian Birdwell, another bill by State Senator Paul Bettencourt, have passed the Senate, notably in the House, to your point, right, House Bill 3, which is the bill you're talking mm-hmm about, which we could spend forever on.
Yeah.
You know, it separated out pandemics from the Disaster Act part-like codes, all right? Hurricanes are treated now differently. But notably, it perpetuated, right, the governor's authorities with the small exception of a few things, right? Like, I think the one amendment that did get on there that eventually got updated on third reading was calling in the legislature, right, after a certain period of time.
Right, four months,
correct,
something like that, yeah.
But I think the other thing to note there is that there was an amendment by State Representative Cody Vassute mm-hmm about mask mandates.
Yes.
Right? It originally passed, kind of got adopted, right? Mm-hmm. Representative Burroughs brought it back up, right? Like, there was a motion to reconsider because I guess Democrats took issue with they didn't hear it,
yeah,
right? And that bill comes back up for a vote. It passes a vote verification, and it suddenly fails. So the Texas House okayed the mm-hmm continuation of the governor and or local governments being able to mandate masks still.
Certainly one of those areas where you see the House and the Senate at a pretty big conflict right now. And again, just a couple weeks left in session. Remains to be seen how they're going to settle that conflict. Carol, watching right now, says, what about the bill Governor Abbott was so proud of, sales of alcohol to go?
He signed that this week.
He did sign that. Yeah. He signed that one into law. So, gender modification, haven't touched that, but you can get a margarita in the drive-thru.
That's
so
right.
I guess that's real liberty, right? switching subjects a little bit here. The House also heard, I can't believe it was this week. It seems, I guess, right, it's a really long week. But heard a bill dealing with critical race theory. Essentially, it was originally a ban or a prohibition on critical race theory, this controversial curriculum that a lot have criticized as Marxist and poisonous. That bill was brought up by State Representative Steve Toth. And as filed, the bill was pretty good, you know, covered a lot of the areas. But again, we see just how Democrats often run the floor in the Texas House, and after several hours of debate, not really the same bill.
Absolutely not. I mean, there were, I don't even know where to start. There were tons of amendments that were proposed. Originally, he kind of pushed back on, and then it seemed like as the night went on, mm-hmm, he just started accepting them, right? And these are things like, it was kind of like by 1,000 pricks, mm-hmm, right? Where it was like, they'd have an amendment to say, oh, well, if you're going to do that, you have to include this bill or this set of texts, right?
Yes.
And slowly but surely, the kind of insider term is watering down, right?
Yeah, it's, and you have to teach about, you know, white supremacy and how that's bad and this and that. Stuff that doesn't really have to do with the bill.
Right.
You need to take out de Tocqueville, Democracy in America. Right. You got to take that out of the curriculum. And literally, you really saw this. But the interesting thing there was, mm-hmm, you saw the author actually accepting these amendments.
Right. It seemed like as the night went on, either to save face, right, like because it's a very public forum in which this is happening, he just started accepting them. And I assume this is what you're getting at, is some of these bills that I guess they think that if this goes to a conference committee between the House and Senate, they can take these amendments off. Or if not, we potentially have a watered-down critical race theory.
Well, right? Even though, and the frustrating thing, I think, for a lot of activists who are watching this, was that Dems, you know, watered down this bill. Democrats watered down this bill, and yet, you know, they didn't vote for this bill, right?
Right.
In fact, you had one Democrat state representative, Diego Bernal, speaking against the bill before they finally passed it out, essentially on party lines. And look what he had to say. It's interesting.
So many of you privately have said to me, and I'm going to say this, you're not going to like it. So many of you said to me privately that you don't like this bill, you don't want to vote on it, you wish it didn't come to the floor. But if you do, what's going to happen? You're going to get primaried. It's a verb now.
Mr. Wu,
and, somehow, in your place, will be someone worse. And today, if you vote for this bill, my question to you is, what's the difference?
Mr. Speaker.
One has to wonder who the Republicans were that Mr. Bernal was talking to. I don't doubt that that's possibly true, that you have Republicans saying, oh, please, we don't want to vote on this. But like I said, Democrats didn't even end up supporting the bill. So it raises the question, why would you accept all these amendments? One theory and one explanation is that, well, these bills are going to go to conference and we can strip them out then. But we were talking earlier. I mean, this seems like a really new phenomenon or something that they've done a lot more this session.
Right. There's been a few examples of this happening during the session where it's like, you know, there's prolonged debate and eventually it just becomes, all right, let's just accept amendments for whatever reason. And internally, right, sources say to me, certainly, and I'm sure to you, you hear this, is that, oh, well, the plan all along is we know this is going to go to a conference committee, so we'll just strip off those amendments then. There's something, in my opinion, that's inherently non-transparent about that process. And you're asking activists for a lot of trust, right, that in the waning days of the legislative session, right, we're getting in the last few weeks, that there's that's a lot of trust to say that you're not only going to get those terrible amendments off, right, but you're going to do that, and then, oh, by the way, the same House, the same Senate that passed these with the amendments on there have to accept the conference committee report.
They have to approve it. And,
that's right.
And, you know, we saw this happen with the budget. We saw it happen with an election integrity bill in the House. And now we've seen it happen with critical race theory. And you really have to wonder, look, there's a lot of steps in this process. And we've followed those throughout the session, right? Your bill goes to committee, bill goes to the floor. This whole conference committee part, though, is essentially the only part where there's not really any transparency. Okay, these committees, these conference committees, they don't really exactly meet. They don't really hold a formal meeting. And so all of this is happening behind the scenes. And yet we're being told, you know, as activists, that we have to trust lawmakers, trust our lawmakers, that they're going to go do the right thing. I think you're right. Something doesn't, like, sit right with that.
Sure.
So we'll see what happens there. I mean, this critical race theory bill certainly has some more steps to go to, but it is important to note that legislation that was stronger did pass the Senate earlier this year, and so Maybe they'll get it to the finish line.
Right.
Jerry asks right now, watching, by the way, has constitutional carry passed, and what does it contain about weapons? Has constitutional carry passed? It's passed the Senate. It's passed the House, but it's still working through the process.
Right. They have officially now, not to get too in the weeds about this, officially both chambers have appointed conference committee, right? Appointed conferees, or five members from the House, five members from the Senate, to what's called a conference committee, charged with reconciling the differences between the House version as it passed and then the Senate version with additional amendments, right? Mm-hmm. And they have some time, a few weeks, to potentially get that done. Whatever they come out with will come out with what's called a conference committee report.
Yep.
And then both chambers will have to accept the conference committee report ultimately for the bill to be passed. So it's still possible. It's kind of unclear, at least until we see what the conference committee report is, as to what is still in the bill, to the second part of his question there. But those conferees, by the way, in the House.
Right, we got them listed out here.
Okay, it's State Representative Matt Schaefer, of course, the author of the bill, Dustin Burroughs, James White, Republicans, and then you've got Democrats Terry Canales and Ryan Guillen. All of these folks were supporters of the bill, mm-hmm. notably, joint authors and co-authors. On the Senate side, you've got the sponsor or the author there in the Senate, Charles Schwertner, Republican. You got Brian Birdwell, Donna Campbell, Brian Hughes, and Brandon Creighton. All of them are Republicans.
Yeah. Interesting that you have a couple of Democrat members in the House and all Republicans in the Senate, but those were Democrats that were favorable to the bill. And so we'll see how this process plays out. I think if you had to gauge it right now, seems pretty positive that this thing might actually get signed. You've certainly seen a lot of pressure put on Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and put on Governor Greg Abbott to get something done this session.
And the governor did signal that he would, like, if he got there, he supports it, right, if it gets to the finish line, so...
Another RPT priority I do want to mention briefly. We talked about monument protection earlier, but you did have one bill. Wasn't necessarily the big Alamo protection bill, but it was one of the bills filed by State Representative Kyle Biederman that did make it to the floor yesterday. But, you know, it was one of those situations, and essentially the bill says that, you know, the Alamo, all the renovations, the museum, the site should focus on essentially the battle, right? What actually happened there in the Alamo. This in response to a lot of movement by kind of social justice warriors to really recreate the history and rewrite it of what happened there at that storied site. But, you know, this was a case where you saw that Representative Biederman is up there and he's fighting for this bill, but he's kind of getting hit from both sides, both Republicans and Democrats.
Right. Similar to the critical race theory bill, there were some amendments that were kind of poked, you know, from Democrats that were to try to kind of water it down, if you will. And then there was, you know, an amendment by a fellow Republican that kind of pitted Republican versus Republican, if you will, authored by State Representative Jeff Leach. And that amendment had several co-authors on it, and it kind of created these kind of weird, poignant moments. He offered it the first time a point of order was called by Representative Brian Slayton. He pulled it down, and then he offered an amendment a little bit later, right, that effectively did the same thing, and that eventually got on there.
Yeah, so, you know, again, it's one of the situations where you, with friends like these, I mean, we're gumming up the works here, especially at this time, right, where it's counting down and there's priority bills that are dying. Howard Watching says, he talks about that monument protection bill by Cole Hefner that was on there. And he says it was not read last night, so sick of Republicans. Hearing a lot of people say a lot of similar comments.
Sure.
But some people are sick of Republicans. I can tell you the Democrats are not doing much better either, sure. At least with some of the stuff they've been saying lately. We showed you the clip of Diego Bernal earlier, but check out this clip. You've got State Representative Retta Bowers, a Democrat from the Dallas area, who is speaking against or asking questions of the author, Matt Shaheen, on a bill to prevent churches from being closed during pandemics, right? Something that we've seen happen over the last year in some of the some counties where county commissioners or maybe city councils have either shut down or severely limited churches. Look what Retta Bowers says about churches.
And as I said, I have yet to go back to church in a house of worship. Mm-hmm. I still do church online every Sunday. It has kept many people in our churches and our communities alive. And so my last question is, would this bill limit an authority's ability to impose guidelines such as limiting capacity or requiring masks to be worn during these religious activities? Because we know that in these religious activities, singing goes on. People come into a place of worship broken, so hugging is going on. You might see Big Mama and kiss her on the cheek. So these places could be considered super spreader events. So tell me, would it impose guidelines such as limiting capacity or requiring masks to be worn during these activities?
So first of all, I do agree with you that churches are for the broken. Jesus Christ called himself the great physician. So I agree with your comments there. A city is free to apply ordinances as they are today. They just have to do it equally. So they can't discriminate against any type of religious institution within their boundaries. But they most certainly can limit capacity as they do today, fire codes, all those types of items, they still apply. What this statute does is it prevents discrimination of religious organizations and undue burden placed by the government.
And so with all of that, you believe that that still does keep Texans safe, right?
I'm sorry.
It does keep Texans safe, even if they're in those large spaces.
With this legislation, Texans will be very safe, and we will have greater religious protections.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Speaker, I move passage.
Well, there you have it. Texas Democrats saying that churches are super spreaders. They need to be, closed for all of our health and safety. Just absolutely a wild comment. So, you know, don't forget, as we look at kind of what Republicans are doing, the Democrats right there are just as bad in many ways, and often worse. Few announcements of stuff kind of going forward on the calendar this week. You've got a special runoff set by Governor Greg Abbott, setting the date for the runoff up in the 6th Congressional District, up in kind of North Texas area, between Susan Wright and Jake Elzey. That is scheduled for July 27th. So if you live in that area, that's going to be the date that you're going to be voting. Early voting set for a week or two before that. Also this week, you had the governor's race opening up a little bit. You've got Don Huffines, a former state senator, joining Chad Prather, a humorist and TV personality who has already announced they're challenging Abbott from the right. And I think we've talked about this. I think we expect to see a little bit more of that.
Sure.
In the coming weeks and months as we look towards that that primary election for Greg Abbott. Also, I want to let folks know, we've talked about child gender modification, this gender mutilation bill, rather. Excuse me, I can't talk. A lot of that revolves around the story of James Younger. And we've got, if you don't know this story, you're going to want to absolutely check this out. At 5 o'clock p.m. today, Central Time, we've got the Saving James feature premiering on our Facebook page. You can check out that video. Absolutely amazing. It's one of those videos, as you say, you don't maybe even want to see it, but you need to see it. I mean, it's an absolutely heartbreaking story. And so I encourage everybody to check that out at 5 o'clock today. And, you know, as we've got 2 weeks left in this legislative session, essentially, it's never too late to be making your voice heard to lawmakers. If you need help doing that, you can check out our Texas directory at texasscorecard.com, where you can figure out how to get in touch with your state representatives, your state senators, your congressmen, whoever, right? You can make your voices heard. And I see here in the comments, some of y'all are making your voices heard right now in our comments. You got Patsy saying Dustin Burroughs needs to go, talking about the chair of calendars, who is in a large part responsible for a lot of the deaths of some of these bills. Susan, watching from Jefferson County, says she's represented by Dade Phelan, who is disappointed her in this session. And so certainly hear a lot of that as well. Dade Phelan, of course, being the Speaker of the House from East Texas there, Southeast Texas. I want to encourage everybody, you know, we're going to be continuing to watch, right? These last moments, these last days are so important in the legislative process. There's a lot that can happen. You still have Senate bills that are coming to the House. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be following that every step of the way. And we really encourage you to check it out at texasscorecard.com. I know Jeremy's doing it. Great job covering all the aspects, all the analysis as we tick down those days, that countdown I think I've got behind me there. We got 17 days, 31 minutes, 1 second left until they leave the building for good, or at least until they come back for a special session.
That's right.
So we're going to continue watching it. I think they're meeting right now, but y'all have a great weekend. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.